Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello, it's me, Kate. Just in Birmingham, finishing up at the Commonwealth Games, and I'm so excited to welcome you guys all to the very first episode of The Drop-In. The series is basically about really getting to know the people inside the game. The plan is to strip away all of the cliche and just have honest conversations that will hopefully make you laugh a bit, might even hold a few life lessons in there as well. We're excited about this first one because we think he's a really fascinating guy. It's Hal Robson-Kanu, maybe the most iconic Welshman that wasn't actually born in Wales. We're going to hear in this episode how he fell into the Wales national team pretty much by accident, making his debut in 2010, then becoming a massive part of the team that reached Euro 2016, the country's first major tournament since 1958. He then went on to play an even more important part in that incredible win over Belgium in the quarterfinals. It was such a big moment. We knew Ramble listeners would have loads of memories of that goal. So we asked a few of you to share them with us and we played them out to our guests, which was a pretty cool thing to do. Tiny bit emotional. There are a few players so strongly synonymous with just a single goal, a single turn, in fact. But today, the plan is you learn a lot more about Hal, not just about his 9 years at Reading, the club he joined at 15, or his 5 turbulent years at West Brom, where he got all the regulars in the managerial merry-go-round at the Hawthorns, by the way, from Pulis to Pardew to Allardyce, don't worry. With all of these interesting people he'd worked with and the way he's left such a huge imprint on Wales and Welsh fans' lives, I wanted to ask him about the people who've affected him over the course of his career. He's chosen some really interesting names and a Ramble favourite is in there as well. So listen out for that. We're going to head into the chat now and dive into all of those things and hopefully get a bit of an understanding of the person behind the Cruyff turn. Hope you enjoy it. Thomas Hal Robson-Kanu, good to see you.
Likewise, thank you for having me.
Would you like to be Thomas or Hal? Because, of course, everybody knows you as the Wales hero, Hal Robson-Kanu, but you tend to use Thomas generally.
Yeah. So, like, Hal's actually not officially my name. So, it's on my birth certificate, it's like Thomas Henry.
Right.
So, Hal was a pet name sort of given to me by my grandmother. It was sort of every so often I'd get called Hal.
And this is the Welsh grandmother who is the reason.
Correct. Yeah. Right. So, she was born in Caerphilly. And so, sort of a pet name every now and then. And then as I was older, I ended up signing for Arsenal when I was 10. Mm. And they were like, oh, what's your name? And I was like, oh, just call me Hal. Like that. So ended up everything was then Hal. And then ended up going, obviously, you know, through school, then through into all of a sudden becoming a professional footballer, and it was like, you know, in news articles, etc., I was referred to as Hal. Everything was Hal. And but actually on my sort of birth certificate, my passport, it's Thomas Henry.
So it's gone back around the other way now, has it? Just, what does your family call you these days?
Thomas, yeah.
I see. Okay. It all makes sense. I think what is so unbelievable about having experienced something like what happened with you at the Euros is the way that you're such a part of people's memories. And we're going to talk a bit about that. But we wanted to talk about people who are important to you. And I think the first person, when I asked you about this, the first person that you brought up to me was someone who was a coach in your early career. Is that right?
Yeah. So again, I think like throughout your career and obviously throughout your life, there's always people who, you know, play a role and play and impact you, you know, both positively and negatively. But, you know, those ones who do impact you positively, you know, whether they're in the form of mentors, whether they're, you know, they act as father figures or mother figures, whether they actually act as, you know, they end up giving you inspiration, or they actually are the ones who believe in you, you know. And sometimes that could be, doesn't have to be a senior figure. Sometimes that could be a friend. And it could be, and that friend actually plays a role in your life, which allows you to, whether it's get through adversity, achieve something you didn't think you could achieve, you know, dream big, you know. And it's like things like that actually, you know, are significant. So for me, in my life, like I've been very fortunate to have, you know, whether mentors or coaches, what have you. But, you know, the first major one in my life, you know, probably was Eamon Dolan. And he was academy manager at Reading. You know, when I moved there, he ended up coming, you know, sort of six, 9 months after. And he was such an influence in terms of sort of shaping and nurturing my mentality in professional sport. And he also was there during a time when I obviously faced significant adversity. And one thing that I always remember, you know, from him is that the belief that he had in me, even when you know I didn't believe it myself. And so he was a massive role model for me, but also I know for a lot of other players, you know. And unfortunately he passed away in 2016, which was really difficult for everyone. And he allowed us to, like I said, dream big, realize that. And as a teenager growing up in sport, you want to play in the Premier League, you want to play international football, but you actually, in the back of your head, you're like, how do I actually do it? Like, it's like, how do you go from here when you're competing with all of these other boys, you're judged consistently. So from a, you know, psychological perspective, you're constantly under pressure, under stress. It's like, how do you deal with that, come through that and actually achieve and realize a dream? And he used to just be like, look, you're going to play in the Premier League. And he'd drop it to me like when I was 16, laying on a hospital bed, and he gave me that sort of mental toughness to really understand that adversity is part of the journey. Mm. So rather than try and fight it, you have to embrace it, you know. So
he's a huge Reading legend, really. The North Stand is now the Eamon Dolan Stand, and it was quite emotional, the celebration or the Memorial Day that took place when they were renaming it for him. He seems to have had an influence on so many young Reading players that he brought through.
Yeah. And I think, like, and the reality is like the fans, everyone around, they don't really know why. Do you know what I mean? Because you had to have been there to have experienced the impact that he had. And don't get me wrong, there were boys there where he would say, look, you know, you're not going to make it. You know, I remember we were on tour in France. I think we were only 16, 15, and I wasn't playing because I'd had the first surgery. So I was recovering at the time, and so it would have been 16. And we went on tour to France. I can't remember the location, but the whole group went, and there was a group of, I think it must have been around sort of 18, 20 academy players. And they were good, like really good players. And I remember Eamon stopped like everyone in the inside of the hotel lobby, and there was like a really old vase like outside, which had obviously been there for over a decade and was going to be there for, you know, pretty much ever. And he was like, guys, I've put inside of that, I've put a time capsule and I've put the names of the play of the boys here who are going to play in the Premier League and those who aren't.
What?
And again, like...
And yeah, it did so the job did, or what was... It was just a...
I don't know. So it was just such a weird... But we... And we knew, like, we sort of... And he sort of spoke to the players who he had said, you know, your name is one who will. And so everyone there, I think, you know, pretty much... He was pretty much spot on, to be honest, because out of the group of players there, you know, there was a handful of us who obviously went on to play in the Premier League.
It's a big achievement. And and it's... So there's two things here. It's having someone who's believed in you and it's having someone like telling you that they believe in you as well. So it's the basis, it sounds like. It makes me feel even quite stressed to sit here and think of you, age 10 or 11, 12, having to deal with all these competing currents that you talk about of people competing against you all the time, and the fact that you're sort of on the path potentially to play in the Premier League, but it's such an unlikely thing to happen. And do you have a sense of how you manage that?
Yeah, it's it is so competitive. It is it's a ruthless industry in a sense where you're judged constantly. You know, whether you walk out onto training, whether you know, offline, social media now, of course, and the big one, you know, playing in games, that 90 minutes streamed globally live around the world. So every single, you know, action you make, every decision you make on the ball, off the ball, every mistake you make, every goal you score, it's like, you know, hyper analyzed to the point of just extreme, you know, extreme levels. So as a kid coming into that, it's like, how do you deal with that psychologically? And there's a lot of ego, there's a lot of bravado within sport, because it's, you know, men's sport is obviously male dominated, you know, the psychology around male, you know, alpha males, competition, being the best, etc. So it's very the strains psychologically are significantly underreported, because you actually don't, there's no safe environment where you can communicate and say, you know, Kate, I feel really nervous about the game on the weekend.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, okay, well, it's your 100th Premier League game. No, but I really feel really nervous. Like, I've got anxiety about it. I don't feel, you know, maybe I'm not, I don't feel fit enough. You know, I feel off the pace. You know, I'm worried about the opposite. Like, all of these things, like, you cannot communicate that.
Because people might be
that.
Like...
Yeah, because if you went... If
Thomas
you went
is a
to,
bit...
Precisely,
being a
if
bit
you went
off the pace.
To the, if you went to a manager or coach, any coach, and it's not their fault... You know, because their remit is to win, right? So they can't. So it's like, it's almost like it's a vicious cycle where that loop is, oh, I feel really nervous about the game. I'm really insecure about this Saturday. If you said that to a coach, they'd have to feed it back to the manager, because if there's a weak link in the team, that's putting the team at risk, putting the potential to win, pick up 3 points, fight for survival, win a trophy, like, at risk. So there's no safe space within the sport to actually deal and open up and communicate around issues from a psychological perspective for players. And therefore what that creates is this environment where there's so much bottled up emotion covering from lots of different areas, whether it's, you know, issues at home, issues in your personal life, issues on the training field, issues, you know, at the with the club, with the manager, with whatever, with your teammates. Like, there's no, you can't talk about it. So I would say, like, and, you know, Stephen Reid recently came out and has done a phenomenal piece on it and spoken and opened up about his own anxiety in sport. And me as a young player watching Stephen Reid on TV playing in the Premier League at, you know, for Blackburn and, you know, for West, and it was like, you almost can't comprehend that he was going through that at that time.
Ben Johnson again, good pace from Johnson. Guns in the middle, if he can find him! Yes, he can! Lewis Grubben for Nottingham Forest! Right in front of the travelling fans, they're delirious! What a start for Stephen Reid and Nottingham Forest! Doesn't show much emotion, but he must be buzzing.
You're in a crazy industry with massive amounts of pressure. You've done phenomenally well to get to where you are today. So how about you just enjoy it and give your best? And actually, like, that level of emotional EQ, emotional intelligence, like empathy in sport, in professional football, is non-existent. And it's like managers have egos, coaches have egos, clubs have agendas. Like, and so it's like, how do you break that down? And then you say, okay, well, the FA, what can the FA do? Oh, we're doing this, you know, kick, we've obviously done different, you know, schemes to support the health and mental, bringing awareness to the issues of mental health and all this stuff. And it's like, well, honestly, like, that's seriously, as a professional player, that did not touch me.
Mm.
So don't publicize that and put that out, you know, FA, we're doing all of this, we're doing this work with these clubs. It didn't touch me.
Yeah.
And I played at the top level of the game for over a decade. No. That's not what you need. That's not what players, you know, people around the players, coaches, managers, that's not what they need. They need training. They need to understand, you know, emotional intelligence. They need to understand empathy. They need to understand, you know, how to do inner work on yourself first before you can help others.
Mm.
And so, yeah, I think it's a really untapped, unexplored subject, which is ultimately letting down players who give their all to this industry. So
it's something that would be incredible to see football lead the way more, because of course, you know, suicide is the biggest killer of men. I think it's under 40.
Mm.
So yeah, it's really important to hear more people like you talk about it. I don't know, do you feel as though you're it feels like you had quite a supportive family setup. We know of course about your granny, who was the reason you ended up playing for Wales, and the way that came about, is it true about you being, is it that in the Reading canteen or something, and Brian Flynn, mm-hmm. someone was taking the piss out of you because you holiday in Wales, and
yeah.
Oh, they'll take anybody. You can just, yeah, yeah. If you just go on holiday to Wales.
Yeah, precisely. So Brian Flynn, again, another legend, like incredible man, incredible human being, you know, played a massive role in putting together the Wales team that, you know, obviously changed a generation. And he was visiting Simon Church, who was playing for Wales under 21s at the time. And I was playing for England under 20s at the time. And I'd been T-boy of Steve Coppell. So I used to get in like really early, literally like 6 o'clock, 5:30, I'd get to the training ground every day. As a sort of young scholar, early pro, and I'd obviously go to the gym, do bits and pieces that again no one will ever see or know.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, why did he make it? It's like, well, actually, it was mad, like it was crazy. So, but anyway, I was T-boy, so I was doing the tees. He didn't say much, and I loved Steve Coppell as a young player coming through at Reading, and There was a demeanor and an aura around him where he was very calm, very relaxed, but you could see he was really on point. He was on job.
Yeah.
He was here to, you know, to do something, and he wanted everyone around him also to be here for a purpose. And so I picked that up very early on as a young kid doing the tees. Like, you'd be nervous the first few because you're doing it to the manager, and the manager's dictating who's playing, who's not, who's gonna, you know, get another contract, all of these stuff. So he wouldn't say much, but every so often he'd just ask a question, just like one question, and we'd just come back. It was after summer. I was doing the tees, and he said where did you go on holiday?
I thought it was going to be some technical thing what you think people should do with set pieces. Oh my God.
Yeah, no. And then I just looked at him and I was like, oh, I just went to Tembi Gaffer. And he went, Tembi? And I was like, yeah, we go there sort of most years. His family would go there as holiday. And he was like, I thought you were going to say Ibiza like that. And I was like, no. Just so anyway, he then ends up telling one of the coaches. The coaches then end up telling a few of the senior boys that I holiday in Wales. So then I had like Glenn Little, Steve Sidwell, Nicky Shorey, Graham Murty, like giving me a bit of banter about it, right? Your holiday in Wales. Like, and I'm just like, yeah, it's actually quite nice. But they had no idea that I was Welsh. Yeah. Or my obviously grandma was Welsh. So then, anyway, this is like a few months later, Brian Flynn comes in, meeting Simon Church. He's in the canteen. I walk into the canteen. Glenn Little sat in the corner with Steve Sidwell. They were always cracking joke. And it was like just after training, it was just like fun time. Like get the, you know, it was like Comedy Central over there. Really good guys. And again, a good core part of seeing that helped me sort of develop into, you know, having a career. And so Glenn Little straight away, he just stands up. He's like, Brian, Flinny, why don't you take Hal? He holidays in Wales. And then he was like saying it as banter, like, and have it, thinking that he's going to have off Brian Flynn. He's like bantering me. And then Brian Flynn just turns and he goes, is that right? And I go, yeah, it's really nice, obviously. And he was like, And he was like, you're not Welsh, are you? And I was like, yeah, my grandmother's Welsh. And he just went, like, just his jaw dropped, and he was on to me. He was like, what's your number? Give me your number. Can you send me a birth certificate? Can you do it? So, and I was like, yeah, cool. I was like, but I'm playing. And then it was obviously decision in terms of, you know, playing for England or playing for Wales. And actually, you know, the big thing for me, I was playing for England under 20s at the time. And Simon Church was playing for England under 21s.
Yeah.
And we'd go away on camps at the same time. And when we'd come back, I'd be like, he'd say, yeah, well, how was it? Like, how'd you get on? And I'd be like, yeah, it was right. It's cool. Like, it was okay. Like, you'd go away, you're on camp, but there wasn't really that togetherness, you know? It's like, and again, it's understandable because you're competing against these boys. And again, the competition at the highest level, this is what it is. But it wasn't that togetherness. So it wasn't like, so you wouldn't actually enjoy going away.
Whereas Wales.
Yeah. Whereas then, like, so I'd be to Simon, I'd say, yeah, it was cool. Yeah, it was all right. Like, you know, just chilled. Didn't really, you know, it was fine. Like, played Germany, whatever. So that was it. And then I would say, how was yours? And he would just say, oh my gosh. He'd be like, it was so good. He'd be like, the boys are wicked. Everyone's so good. Oh. The coaches are this, that, and the other. And it was like, what? So I already knew that there was like a togetherness. And again, obviously the whole together stronger, which then became a massive slogan in that, you know, movement and that experience that we all had as a nation. There was that togetherness, like, that was there from then. And I think that's certainly, obviously speaking with my grandmother as well and making the decision to play for Wales, all of these sort of factors contributed to them me making the decision and being like, well, no, look, I want to go play for Wales. Like, that's my nation. So
awesome. And you made your debut in 2010. And this was the time as well, not just the togetherness that was self-evident from the people you're talking to are going away on Wales camp, but also the fact that Wales had shot up from, what was it, 117th in the world up to 45th, and then, as we know, would go on to the semi-finals of the Euros in 2016. So this was having an impact. What was going on in the camp was having an impact on the results as well, which, to refer to what we talked about earlier, you know, that's the dream, isn't it? If there's a good thing going on and it's also leading to results. And he wasn't the man who gave you your debut, but you wanted to speak about one very important Wales manager, I think, as another influence on your life.
Yeah, I think when I made my debut, it was under John Toshack. And as I said, like, the togetherness, and I'd played for the 21s as well, played a year for the 21s. I had some really good successes in those teams as well, for Wales. And I then made my debut, and under John Toshack, that togetherness of the group was there. And there was a lot of players who were, you know, breaking through, beginning to play for some of the top teams, really performing well at club level. And, you know, that group was almost ready to begin to compete at an international level, but the infrastructure wasn't really there. And, you know, John Toshack, obviously, you know, famous Welsh manager, fucking absolutely iconic, his own history in football as well. But in terms of the way football had developed and the direction that it was going, you know, you had, which has now obviously led to the Pep Guardiola's, Jurgen Klopp's, you know, Brendan Rodgers, his experience, you know, these top managers, there's a fundamental layer, which is like the set layer, and it's just the standards around the place, the infrastructure around the place. It's like without that base layer, nothing can be achieved. And then obviously John Toshack left and Gary Speed came in.
Wales, as Blackmore takes it, and Speed is there. Well,
to be taking them up on the corners like to be taking them up on the set pieces. Makes good contact with this one. Look at this one, driven right across, and you can see they all rise to it together. Mark Hughes is the key man because he took two defenders with him when he rose in the air, and Speed comes behind him, and he puts a lot of speed on that one as he bangs it home.
He literally like changed the direction of Wales and of Welsh football. And what I mean by that is that we had a group of players who were beginning to perform at club level, were beginning to play, as I said, for the, you know, some of the top teams in the top leagues, competing at that level, ready to perform at international level. But the standards at international level weren't, there wasn't that belief and there wasn't that knowledge that actually we can compete, because the nation hadn't competed, you know, really at that level consistently, you know, in its time. And international football is very different from club football. It's completely different. You know, time of year you're playing, the opposition that you're playing, your approach to the methodology that you're going to apply as a team on that game at international level. Like, it's another level up. You have to really be prepared as a unit, as a collective, more so than at club level.
Right.
That's sort of the best way that I can describe it. And so, but nothing like that was in place. So Gary Speed came in and delivered all of that, delivered the foundation, delivered the preparation, delivered the infrastructure to then prepare for games and understand what the opposition is going to do. And it wasn't just that infrastructure, you know, implemented. Like you could speak with him, you know, like, and so he actually cared about you as an individual, regardless of what club you were coming from, what level you were coming from, he genuinely cared. And he, you know, and you saw the likes of Gareth Bale, Aaron Ramsey, Ashley Williams, Craig Bellamy, like everyone looked up to him.
Yeah.
It was phenomenal. But it was just the respect and the aura that he commanded. So yeah, I think 100%, like at that level, he then allowed us to, as a group and then ultimately as individuals, go to the next level,
right,
in the game. And we obviously did that. And yeah, it was, you know, an extremely difficult period for everyone, you know, after he passed. And, you know, we still, obviously, you know, no one knows. It was so hard to take. It was, you know, real. It was traumatic for all of us because we were on this upward trajectory. He was a sort of pinnacle. Pinnacle in that, and you know, all of a sudden overnight, he'd gone.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist
specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the air in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
We asked for lots of questions for you from the Ramble listeners overnight, and lots of the questions were around Jordan. For example, was very keen to ask about how Gary Speed turned Wales's footballing philosophy around. But it almost sounds like, listening to you, that it's not so much the philosophy, although that was part of it. It was the human element and the understanding of Wales as a unit and being this place that people wanted to be that was so important.
Yeah. It always has to start with the human side. You know, you can't go in and implement a philosophy like the philosophy to who. Like, you have to humanize and understand individuals at an emotional level, understand what their wants, needs are, and then how do you then take that, add it to a collective, and then together implement then a philosophy. So Gary Speed did that.
Yeah, thank you for talking about Gary, because obviously it can't be, you know, it's many years on now, but it can never be easy. And but in a sense, it seems to me to be important to speak about people who have passed who were important to you even more, like just keep talking about them. But thanks for doing that.
Yeah.
Someone else who you did actually mention when we were talking about people who had been important to you, you just mentioned there as well, Brendan Rodgers. Mm. Now, he, of course, has been a big influence on lots and lots of players. You have spoken about your belief that in order to be a great manager, you got to leave your ego at the door. Would, from the outside, it doesn't seem like that is Brendan Rodgers's.
Yeah, no, I think, to be honest, you know, Brendan Rodgers, again, he was another key individual in sort of my early years as a professional. He brought me to Reading.
Yeah,
from Arsenal as a 15-year-old, him and Naz Bashir, and it was a coach as well. And Brendan, he obviously saw talent in me. I was coming from Arsenal, so the Arsenal boys, a certain way of playing, etc. So I had all of the, you know, attributes of what he was looking for, etc. At you know, at Reading when he was academy manager. Within sort of 4 months of joining Reading, he ended up leaving to go to Chelsea's academy.
Yeah. It's more like it was he had an impact on you at that moment because he chose you, right? That's what you...
Yeah, precisely. Yeah. And so he then ended up going to Chelsea's academy. He had, you know, his ambitions were, you know, what he's realising now, which is fantastic. But then he was the one who actually then gave me my debut at Reading. So he came back as manager and he gave me my debut, and he had come into a Reading team which was post Steve Coppell, very much around, you know, dominating the game, second balls in behind, you know, really trying to affect the opposition as opposed to try and control the ball and manipulate the play. And so Brendan Rodgers came into Reading, and that was what he wanted to do, which was a nice vision, and it was a nice thought. But actually, to go from one extreme to the other was too much. And again, he was young in his management. I think he would have don't know how old he would have been.
Well, he's always on about how he wanted to do as many. He was doing coaching courses at 20 or something, yeah, according to Brendan Rodgers.
Yeah. So it was. He would look back at that now as a valuable experience because he had to, as I said, football. You have to win games, and yeah, that's that pressure. So if you're not winning games, then you know. So that it's that vicious cycle, but. Yeah, he was definitely a key individual, and I've kept in touch with him, you know, post that, and he's always, you know, offered support.
Yeah.
And he was very in touch with thoughts, emotions, feelings, what you think, the power of that, okay, how that can then influence, you know, others around you, influence yourself, your own direction. So he was definitely conscious of that, and I think. Yeah, sometimes it maybe comes across in a way
a little bit brash,
arrogant.
I'm persuaded. I'm totally persuaded. I also think, of course, you know, because of what we've talked about a lot already, the way that football is consumed, the way that the little clips get out there, you know, we enjoy on the ramble laughing at things that seem absurd and overblown in the game. So that sort of thing is just a gift, but it doesn't represent the man that you know or the influence that he's had on your career. Now, we're right. We've arrived, I think, at Euro 2016. Mm-hmm. You're smiling. Are you smiling and kind of?
I don't know what's actually coming.
we asked the listeners to leave us a voice note. Wales fans, predominantly, I mean, exclusively, to talk about what they could remember of that most ridiculous moment that must have been just astonishing to live through.
Good run from Aaron Ramsey. Well found.
I got the bus from Bridgend, which is near Cardiff, to Lille the night before the game, and it was such a surreal day.
I was watching Wales, Belgium, in a place called Depot in Cardiff.
That goal gave me that rare feeling where you're seeing something incredible happening in front of you, but you can't quite grasp the reality of it.
Dinkton, Wardrops and Carnu, Taylor's available.
I just remember the ball being crossed in by Aaron Ramsey and then the ball falling to Robson Carnu, and just that turn, it just seemed everything was in slow motion and everything stopped.
But then as soon as that ball hit the net, it was just this outpouring of pure emotion that, you know, very few goals give you.
What a turn! What a goal!
The girls turned round to embrace us, but there were six of us all on the floor holding each other and crying.
I remember for the half hour after it being so nervous that I just sat there and tried to distract myself from the game, learn the names of all the M4 junctions.
I just remember screaming involuntarily at the top of my voice.
It's a goal and a moment that will live with me forever, and I still don't think it gets the recognition that it deserves.
Easily the best day of my entire life.
What a moment for Wales! Wales are 35 minutes from a semi-final.
I watched that game on a big screen in Stuttgart, being the only Belgian there, surrounded by a load of Germans who were very, very happy to see that I was unhappy. So, yeah, Robson Carnu, I mean, great goal, but fuck off.
How do you feel hearing that?
That's funny. It's definitely obviously emotional, I think. It was just a unique period, and I think it was just like more what we had achieved as a group qualifying for the tournament. Like,
yeah.
We were heroes. It was like literally like going to flying out to the tournament. We had already done it. We'd achieved what we'd set out to achieve. So we were truly just riding on a massive high, and the first game was incredible, you know, scoring a winner, and that was phenomenal. But again, it was just about the group. It was never about the individual, whether it was Gareth Bale scoring, me, Aaron Ramsey, like whatever it was just about the group and that momentum that we had. And it was backed by an incredible fan base, the Red Wall. And, you know, it was, we didn't really know the impact, what was happening back in Wales and back in the UK. But, you know, we sort of got a glimpse of it. You'd see the edits like on the fan parks and all of that, which were pretty wild. And there's some crazy videos which I've been sort of sent, which are just, you know, nuts. But I think it just, you know, encapsulates the success that we had generated, you know, over the years. It was just coming to that point where we then shifted and gave then that next generation that belief that they can compete at this level and they can achieve what they wanted to achieve. And so, yeah, it was a very, very unique moment. And, you know, I think when we did that, you know, we fully believed we could go on and, you know, win the tournament. And
fucking Portugal.
Yeah. And it was like, actually, the biggest loss that we had was Aaron Ramsey and Ben Davis being suspended.
Yeah.
If that hadn't have been the case, if they had played in that game, like, particularly like Rambo, like, that's what he's always done in terms of, and again, I don't know if this was visible or not, but Portugal actually sat off us in the game. And it was so weird. It's like seeing like these superstar players like sitting off in like a low block against Wales. They wouldn't come out at us. And if you remember the goal, obviously Ronaldo, it was from a set piece. It was like, it wasn't like it, well, was,
they broke, and then it was a ball fest in the final.
Precisely.
Yeah, of course.
And then, so actually Aaron Ramsey, having, you know, obviously grown up, played as a, come through at Arsenal, you know, obviously bought by Arsenal and come through as a young player at Arsenal and then really established himself. That's what he was so used to, playing against teams who just sat in low blocks. So him missing that game, I think if he had been fit, we would have 100% broken Portugal down. And obviously Ben Davis as well was solid at the back. Incredible.
It's interesting hearing you say about the team as a unit, because from the outside, you know, obviously Gareth Bale is the big name in that team. And a lot of people think of it as being this, you know, there's a few amazing world-class players and then there's these other guys. But the way that can you explain to us how it became such a unit, like how there wasn't any resentment? Because obviously you had a big influence on qualifying, but as one of the people in the compilation said, you know, did you even get enough the credit you deserved?
Yeah, no, I think it's been, to be honest, the goal and everything, it's been spoken about so much, so I don't, it's not about that at all. But actually the togetherness with the group, it was just because, like I said, we'd connected on, you know, a sort of human level. Like, it wasn't about, you know, the ego or the title or, you know, how much someone had been bought for, who was playing for what club. Like, that never came into like the thought process. It was like, we're a group of players, we've come together, how can we do the best, not only for the nation, for the team, for ourselves as a unit? And that's the thought process. So obviously externally it's like, you know, you've got Gareth Bale, you know, world's most expensive player, 100% him and a team is going to change the performance or the outcome of a lot of games. But again, you know, you've seen it with Messi at Argentina. You know, he's only just won his first tour, you know. Yeah. So it's really not a given where you have, you know, a superstar in the team and then you're going to have success. Like, it is fundamentally always about the team. And I think a big factor of that as well was actually Gareth Bale acknowledging that too. Yeah. He'd never come in. He never had an ego. He never was like, look down on any of the players, regardless of where you came from. He wanted the best for you. He wanted the best for the team, and he was willing to then give his best to the team as well. So I think that makes a significant difference too. So,
On the subject of who's getting moves to where, SC Drury asked, "How true were the Atletico rumours after the
Atletico?" Yeah, so we had discussions with them. It was wild. After that, it was nuts. We had. It was insane. Like, I remember offers coming in from China, offers from Turkey, offers from UAE, like insane offers. But I just wanted to play in the Premier League, to be honest. So yeah.
So you went to West Brom.
Yeah.
And that was, from the outside, seemingly a fairly chaotic few years. Of course, relegations featured in that, and also you played under what, 9 managers. What was that like from the inside?
Yeah, I think there was a really good group of individuals there. So the players were really good. You know, the core group of players, which sort of stemmed throughout my time there. Again, it had that sort of togetherness, that feel around it. But I think in terms of, you know, sort of the ownership and the, you know, management structure, Tony Pulis, obviously, you know, did fantastic well. First season I did, you know, was there. I think we finished sort of top half or 11th or 12th, somewhere around there. Really successful. But then I think the owners were expecting the club to kick on, you know, sort of compete for Europe and all of these things. And unless you're going to go and invest, you know, hundreds of millions of pounds in the transfer market, you know, each summer window, that's not really that realistic. You might achieve it in a one-off, but you're never going to be able to maintain it. So I think they probably pulled the trigger a little bit too early in terms of getting rid of Tony Pulis, and that sort of sparked a, you know, sort of chain reaction of then, you know, Alan Pardew came in. Again, you know, sort of he wanted to put his mark and his stamp on the team and on the club. And, you know, actually, it's not really that possible. Like, you have to sort of, yeah, it didn't really work, just to put it lightly.
By the end as well, then you guys were relegated with under Sam Allardyce. And that and that was it for you. You left.
Yeah, so final game away to Leeds in the Premier League. Of that season, scored and sort of thought, well, yeah, I think from my perspective, I'd set the Turmeric Co up in 2018, and you know, we'd grown that sort of year on year, and I was running the business alongside playing, and from a physical perspective, it was good because mentally I could, you know, it stimulated me mentally, so it was actually nice having the two running coincide. Coinciding with each other. And yeah, we're beginning to really change people's lives through nutrition.
So you are retired from
I'm not
football.
Officially retired.
You're not right, you weren't about to make an announcement for us.
No, I'm not officially retired.
Because it must feed to, like, I really buy into what you're talking about in terms of the health, food, and the it's exciting to see. And I'm interested to find out if you do become the next Jamie Oliver and all this sort of stuff. But equally, like, there's a short period of time when your career is. And if you look at that Wales team that qualified for the, which I'm sure you did actually, you were probably punditing on it, weren't you? Qualified for the World Cup, you know, it's not, and beat Ukraine. It's not actually, there's been a few changes, but it's not that dissimilar to the one that you were playing in 2016. And yeah, you're not in the frame. Mm. How does that feel?
Yeah, I think it's when you become like attached to, or you attach a role, profession, title to your identity. I think that becomes the issue, an issue, because it's like, well, no, like, I experienced that. I had fantastic success, but being a professional footballer doesn't define me, right? So it's like, but the unfortunate thing in the world we live in today, and, you know, is a lot of people live by that. So if you're a professional footballer, then you identify as a professional footballer. Well, then what happens when you then stop? What do you do? And it's the same as whether you're a presenter, whether you're a doctor, whether you need to realize that, no, these do not define me. And actually, you don't have to then identify yourself with that role, because it's just a role. It's a job. It's, of course, a massive privilege and a massive, you know, as I said, the enjoyment is second to none. But actually, for me, it was, like I said, like, there was an opportunity for me to really continue to change and impact people's lives through what we're doing with the Turmeric Co. And being able to do that here and now was a unique opportunity for me, and one which I took. So, yeah, of course. And now, as a fan, you know, whether it's at, you know, West Brom, whether it's at Wales, whether it's at Reading, like, whatever it is, I enjoy seeing and watching, you know, the players play. And as a nation now for Wales, it's an exciting time. I'm really looking forward to them competing in the World Cup. Hopefully they go beyond what we've already has already been achieved in the nation. And that would be phenomenal for everyone to see. So, yeah, I think it's ultimately just around sort of mindset. And, yeah, I think from my perspective, you know, will I be involved in the game? You know, who knows? Like, I think, you know, whether it's coaching, management, these are all interesting areas. But fundamentally, it's like, how can you add as much value as possible with whatever you're doing?
It's a good ball, Aaron Ramsey here. Ramsey, can he stay on his feet? He can. Ramsey can! He's in!
the last person you wanted to talk about is your dad, because you're working with him on your business. He's you're the boss. He's
No, no, no. So again, like my father, again, he's one of those individuals who has, you know, continually backed me. So whether it was through when I was having those surgeries on that hospital bed, he knew how much I wanted to have a career, play professional football. And he always believed in me, and he would allow me to go that extra mile and facilitate me to do that. He wouldn't do it for me, but he would, if I wanted to go that extra mile, stay longer, do more, he would basically allow me to do it and facilitate that. And so, yeah, he's another, you know, obviously a key individual, being my father anyway, you know, you would hope that they're going to back you regardless, but he really did play a pivotal role in everything that I've done and everything that I've achieved. And fundamentally, when I look back, the product of the turmeric shots allowed me to recover from the pain and inflammation that I was experiencing as a teenager, having had these surgeries. So
these were things that were being made at home. What you're now selling with your business are things that your dad cooked up in the, I don't know,
homemade recipe
in the kitchen. Yeah, just like, so all of even while natural... he was being a lawyer, like a hotshot lawyer.
Legal. Well, and it wasn't. He was so legal. He was a lawyer working. He was a civil servant in law, but he effectively created this blend of these raw natural ingredients, which consisted of raw turmeric, raw ginger, raw pomegranate, raw pineapple, raw watermelon, which are all powerful natural ingredients from an anti-inflammatory, antioxidant perspective, and hold functional compounds which can support recovery in the body.
And he did this for you? He was just like...
And he created that blend when I was going through and had these surgeries, and right, I couldn't shift the pain and inflammation in my knee. And once he created it, again, we researched, I looked into all sort of Ayurvedic practices, Eastern medicines, like how they use like natural ingredients to heal, you know. And so my father, we basically created this blend of these raw natural ingredients of all of those that I said, and it was this sort of golden elixir, and that's what I had. And within 6 weeks, I was pain-free.
As we wrap up, Thomas, looking back at the three people, well, four in the end to some degree, but we talked about Eamon Dolan, we talked about Gary Speed, and a little bit about Brendan Rodgers as well. And then third of all, who's influencing you today is your dad, and has done throughout your career. Do you see any particular connection between the people that you've been drawn to as mentors throughout your life? Does that shine any kind of light for you on the kind of life that you're trying to have?
I think... they've all clearly had a level of belief in what I've wanted to do. You know, they've backed me as an individual. They've shown faith in me. They've given, you know, me confidence when there wasn't maybe that inner confidence or inner understanding of what confidence actually means. Yeah, I think there's definitely similarities there, and they've all played positive roles in me developing as a individual throughout my life, which is, you know, really, you know, humbling and great to look back at and see.
Do you feel like you still need people to help you have confidence?
No, I think understanding what confidence is, like what is confidence? Like, so break it down. What is confidence? Okay, I'm confident. You're confident in a room of speaking. You're confident to go and achieve your dreams. So actually, like, it's deeper than what you think confidence is. It's like confidence is knowledge of yourself. So have you done a dive on yourself to understand what it is that you really want in your life, right? So then when you then begin to understand that, then it's like, well, are you willing to commit to making that happen? So, and in order to do that, you have to give your all. So therefore, when you're, you know, in a room or you're going for a task, or you need to complete an objective, like, you have confidence in yourself, but it's not confidence, it's knowledge.
These guys, the connection I was making is because these guys were saying, you know, there are some things you could aspire to do, and you didn't necessarily know that.
Yeah, 100%. But obviously, obviously, as a teenager, like going through it, and again, it's like experiences that you've never had before as a teenager. So how do you don't know what to think. Should I be thinking this? Should I be, am I too arrogant? Am I too confident? Am I not confident enough? Like, so you need that guidance and that sort of support structure to help form that. But then actually you realize that you hold the answers. you know, the truth is always within you. So it's like, well, you know, just understand yourself, and that will allow, that will inform you in what decisions that you need or have to make, or what you want to make. So,
Thomas Howell, Robson Kanu, thank you very much for chatting to us.
Thank you very much. Hey, pleasure.
So that's it, our first drop-in with Wales legend Thomas Howell Robson Kanu. I really hope you guys enjoyed it. I'm excited to hear what you thought. For me, I felt like the most interesting thing was the way that he didn't seem to have decided if he actually was retired yet, and the way that he reframed his business work as being the most important thing in his life now. I also thought it was pretty interesting hearing the similarities between the important figures in his life. It made me really wish I'd met them. If you're listening to this episode the day it came out, we are dropping in on two huge guests this week. I cannot wait. It's Liverpool assistant manager and Jurgen Klopp's right-hand man, Pep Linders, and one very close to my own heart, Spurs legend Glenn Hoddle. So get in touch with your questions on Twitter, at Football Ramble, and also tell us who else we should chat with. Make it as ambitious as you like. We're going to go after these people. We want to talk to the best minds in the game. Find me on Twitter and Instagram at KVL Mason, or you can also tweet us, of course, at Football Ramble. Thanks again for listening to this one, and we'll speak to you soon.
This was a Stack production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking, like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.